is a podcast that watched Christmas.
Hello, and welcome to episode 60 of If This Is a Podcast, Then What's Christmas? I hope your lockdown, social distancing circumstances are okay, or whatever your Prime Minister or President or King or Queen has decreed you must do. Obey the rules, be alert or something. So today I'm speaking to Richard Denny, who I've known one way or another for about 25 years because we started in exactly the same agency at pretty much exactly the same time. Maybe there was a few months difference. And I think, you know, part of what's interesting here is to see how his path diverged from mine. You know, if you could start two people in the same place. Rich is fantastically talented. He won a Cannes Gold in his first year in advertising, which is pretty amazing. Consistently getting stuff at D&AD, winning awards, working in great agencies. Did the wonderful Carlsberg Old Lions ad, which I think if you're in any way aware of that, you're of the opinion that it's a bit of a modern classic. Really fantastic. He talks all about how that came about. And then he and Dave Henderson, who was also there at Y&R at the same time, became ECDs of DLKW Low, and now Rich is ECD of St. Luke's. So I just thought it was fascinating to have a little chat about that journey and how it came about, how the pieces of work came about, how the agency moves came about, and, you know, how Rich finds himself where he is today. He's a lovely guy. We had a lovely chat. I hope you lovely enjoy it. Cheers. When I turned up at Y&R straight out of college, in fact, I was on placement, I think, you know, still during a bit of college, or right at the end of it anyway. And you were there, and you know, we could list all the other teams, but I think maybe Ewan and Graham were still there as well, but there were like Sam and Dave and whatever. And I know you guys were new, but because, was it Dave you worked with? Was a bit...
Yeah, so what, yeah, I think you, because you were with Paul, wasn't you? Yeah. Was it Paul? You and Paul together, weren't you?
Yeah.
You and I, so you were there on placement just before me, funny enough.
Oh, really?
I think, because Ewan had just left to go to... DDB. Was Ed and Dave there when you was at Y&R? Ed, do you remember Dave Masterman and Ed Edwards?
No, they weren't.
Yeah, no, so they'd gone, and then I think Ewan was... I think Ewan had just left. I can't... It was terrible, wasn't it? I think he may have just left, or he was about... Or he was in the transition. Because I went in... I think I went... Because I used to go in and see Rob. Rob was at my old... at my college, but I didn't know Rob. He'd left when I was in my first year. By the third year... my tutor, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and he said, look, you've got, you know, the one thing I think you'd be good at is advertising, you know, with the ideas and everything. He said, look, my brother-in-law, do you remember my old partner Dave West?
Yeah.
He was below the line. He said, look, he wants to go above the line, why don't you team up with him? And you know, we put a book together, which it was funny in itself. The book was pretty shit, to be honest. But our CV was really good, and we used to go and see Rob and Madge, God bless her, and they gave us like inspiration and told us who to visit and what to do and helped us sort of build the book. We had some interesting thoughts in there, but I think it was the CV that we did that got us the knocks on the door. So we did this thing, I mean, I laugh about it now. We got some Citroen 2 CV metal cars, and I cut them in half. I remember going back to my old college and cutting them in half and then sticking them in this card, and it was our two CVs. A bit punny. It was really, I know, it was bad. And then we had like this like one card with a traffic light, green traffic light for Yes, See Us. But you know what's funny? I remember we sent it to David Abbott. We sent it to a few people. We sent it to Mike Cousins, and Mike Cousins said, yes, come and see us. I think David Abbott did. And then who else sent it? Yeah, we sent it to Lowe's. Frank Lowe said yes.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, so, but it was pretty shit bit. The design wasn't great, and it was, you know, it was definitely a bit punny. But I think the intent of trying to make noise and do something to get your foot in the door, which is what they used to do. Do you remember that brilliant one where I think it was a team sent a brick to Trevor Beattie's? To Trevor Beattie, because they, you know, said, look, you know, with regards to space, we're willing to build our own office just to get in your door. And anyway, we got a placement in Y&R. Some places we went and saw some people, and Y&R was our first placement. We never left there. You know, we stayed there. That was our first gig. And that's with you guys, wasn't it? And there was Anita and Budsy and obviously Rob and Madge.
Yeah. Can I just go back one little stage further? So you were at, was it an advertising college you were at, or was it?
No. I did a degree in design communication media. So I didn't go to ad college. It's really funny because like my son's just about to go to college to do design, and he's thinking about advertising. And I'm like, look, think about, you know, keep your options open at this stage. In hindsight, I would love to have gone to advertising college, I think. I did a 3-year, I did graphic design for 2 years. Then I did a 3-year degree, which was everything but advertising. We didn't have any advertising tutors. In fact, most of my tutors, they were like from London School of Printing and all that. And they all hated advertising. but they saw that I was pretty good at those sort of like little ideas and things. And even a couple of them said, even my tutor, who I ended up working with, his brother-in-law, he said, look, that's what you'd be really good at. You're not, you know, I didn't have the mindset to sit there and sort of hammer and chisel, craft these sort of, you know, magazines together and all that sort of stuff. I was pretty crap at that kind of technology as well. But I had ideas that you know, with the right people, like an illustrator or a designer, would spark and grow into something, and they could all see that. So their thing towards the end of the year was, why don't you do advertising? And they were like, even though we haven't got anyone to teach you it, so why don't you just try and sort of teach you it? And I know a couple of people that went on to ad school, so why don't you go and see them, which was Rob and then Madge, and take it from there. So that's how it all started, really. I mean, I had no aspiration to go into ads, even though I mean my first ad that I fell in love with was for McEwan's. Do you remember McEwan's with the all the guys rolling the ball up? And I remember it being in the cinema, and they end up smashing the ball through the screen. Do you remember that?
Mm.
And then funny enough, one of my favourite ads at the time was by my old partner Dave Henderson, which was the Diamond White.
Love that.
You know?
Every time I saw that in the cinema, it got a laugh. Every time. And I used to go to cinema all the time, and it never failed to get a laugh.
Yeah, I was exactly the same as you. Do you know what was really funny? That was when that was on, that was like, I love this. And it was weird, isn't it? I ended up working with a guy that made that.
Yeah.
So I ended up, that's how I ended up. It was, you know, so design and conceptual thinking and stuff like that was probably a good side, but sort of the idea of sort of strategic thinking and turning it into ads. I did some stuff for my degree, and I based it all on advertising. I built this sort of bus shelter and stuff, and the ad was all right, being a thing with a smile. It was pretty basic. But I think that's what I wanted to do. When I walked into that, I remember going in to see Rob and Madge, and I remember them taking us to the bar and all that, and I was like, fucking hell, you get paid to do this. You know, and I think I remember meeting all, I think we all ended up sitting down in that bar together, didn't we? And I was like, geez, I think this is, what, this is what I want to do. It was almost like being at college, you know, how can you get paid to do something that's like a hobby? And I loved it, you know, and it was just a case of them sort of understanding how to do it, how to make an ad or find a conceptual way to entice people to do something or buy something or, you know, so it was, then it was about trying to make noise quickly.
Yeah.
Well,
the only thing I was going to say is, you know, that time at Y&R for me was, I mean, without wanting to get, I mean, you and I could have a conversation that we would know absolutely everything about, and maybe not everyone listening would as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really interesting. So we're in Great London House, this massive building that, is it still Y&R's building, or have they moved somewhere else now?
I think they've moved. I'm not sure, actually. I think they might have moved now. VMLR, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Black Cat cigarette factory.
So, yeah, this amazing old cigarette factory. And I just remember it being Euro 96. I remember it being Britpop. I remember a lot of alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, of course, we made ads, and we'll get into that in a second. But there was a real vibe around that time that it was a lot of fun.
Oh, mate. Do you know what? It's so funny. Do you remember Vindaloo? Me and your mum and my dad and my gran were off to Waterloo. Yeah. I remember a few of us. I don't know. Was you there when everyone had gone to the pub? And there was, do you remember that sofa that we had in the creative department?
Yes. Yeah.
There was a massive sofa. And we went back to that sofa and I said, do you know what? How long has this been here? And I think someone said, oh, this sofa's been here for years. Anyway, I said, I'll tell you what, let's do this. We turned it upside down and cut the side open. We got about 60 quid out of it. That we went straight to the pub. But do you know what? I remember that, Euro 96, and then all the sweepstakes and all getting dressed. God, yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant, wasn't it? It was absolutely brilliant.
It was. But also, from your point of view with Mike as well, like, how did you feel, like, in the position of a... So, because we didn't know how long anyone had really exactly been there and who was favoured or senior or all those kind of things. And I think you guys, particularly possibly more you on your own, I don't know, because there was that ad you made with Mike for the United Nations as well. How did you and Mike get on, and how did that really work for you?
I got on really well with Mike. I found him really inspiring because he didn't talk to you like, you know, there wasn't this sort of hierarchical thing. You knew he was your boss. I mean, he was quite funny. If he was bored of talking, do you remember you used to open the window and put the aircon on?
Yeah.
And that was kind of I've had enough of this meeting now. And you would, he wants to go. But I think he was on this, I'd like to think that he was on the sort of same wavelength as everyone else. You know, he wanted you to succeed. I know he certainly wanted me to do well and to try. And he was very, very quick to sort of see an idea, but he allowed you to do your thing. I mean, it's interesting. I remember sort of going on shoots right at the beginning, and we were just shooting stuff. We did an ad for Amoy, and my very first TV ad. It didn't come on the shoot. We just went and did it ourselves with the producer. So you learn quite quickly. Mm. About craft, and also writing Honey Monster ads and things like that with Katma and Anita as creative directors. Then, you know, you were showing them stuff as well, but they were like, I don't think I remember them coming along. They just made you get on with it and shoot it. And I think that's quite lucky, because I sort of oversee some shoots, and I'm sure you did, but they allowed you to just do it, and I think learn from it. And then with regards to sort of I remember the United Nations thing. It was interesting because that was after we'd done St Mungo's. Yeah. And I remember going in to see Mike. It was, I think that came through Bernard Barnett about the we might have a brief for UNHCR. And I had that thought, and I went in to see Mike, and I just said, look, I've got this idea. And he went, oh, yeah, it's lovely. Yeah, I like that. And I said, do you want to get involved? And he went, well, gee, what, you write it up? And yeah, I will. But he didn't really. I wrote it up, and he went, and he just adjusted the English. Bit dyslexic, and then went, that's great. And then I just went off and did it. But I know I did an ad with him, so I thought, well, I'll learn from that. But what he was up for was just making stuff, and I think it was the fame thing, wasn't it? I mean, you think about the talent that had been in there as well, with like Graham Norway's and Ewan doing that, Pirelli. I mean, the very first time that I ever experienced what it was like was being, I never forget going to the British Arrow Awards when Ewan and Graham had won the sort of ad of the year for Pirelli.
Yeah.
And we were on placement, and they said, just come along, gate crash it. And Mike went, and they went, and I went, really? And they went, yeah. And Rob and Madge went, yeah, gate crash it. And I remember tipping up with a little waistcoat on and stuff, and then getting a serviette hanging over my arm, and then walking up to Y&R's table like a waiter and pouring wine for him. And they were like, oh, he's here. I wasn't even invited. But I remember seeing all the ads as they were playing, and it was just like one after the other. You know, you had Pirelli there. If, you know, you would have Wrangler versus Levi's. You would have Volkswagen versus Audi. And, you know, ads that we now think were gold were bronze, yeah. You know, or silver. But it was all incredible, and it was just, I mean, I found it ever so inspiring. I think that's where I got a real love of the time for TV and film, I suppose. But, you know, Mike was allowed you to get on with it, and we just wrote stuff, and you learned, and you learn stuff with things like Sugar Puffs and you know, brands like that, and doing tens sort of, you know.
Yeah, and you mentioned St Mungo's, and if my memory is right, you got a can gold for that, and that must be very, very early in your career.
The first year.
So what was all that like then? Did you go to Cannes and pick it up?
I did, and that was embarrassing as it was entertaining in itself as well, actually. But Mike Williams, do you remember Mike Williams?
Yes.
He now runs, he now does, he's got this thing called Breathe, and he does sort of meditation and training for well-being and all that. So he, you know, did something completely different. But me and him used to live near each other when I first moved to London. And he said to me, look, you know, the best way you want to make yourself famous, because obviously all these briefs and the big briefs are in there, is do something proactive. And I can't remember what it was. We were walking down the street, I think, and he said, you know, just think about, you know, what you could do for, you know, like a charity or something. And I think I remember seeing some homeless people, and I had this thought about some mungos and a homeless guy being outside while you're indoors. And I told him that, and he went, that's bloody brilliant. And I remember saying it to my old partner, and so he wrote it up, remember me. And then we went to see Mike, and he went, brilliant. I think Mike Williams helped us get some mungos. And then we shot it. I think we shot it with Mark Williams. And then, it won a gold line. And I remember Mike, we were at the agency, and Mike ringing up. I don't think people were really into Cannes as much as they were last, say, 10, 15 years. They weren't. But it was a big one. And Mike went, gee, you won yourself a gold. Get your arses down here now. Put us up in a room that was literally that carpet going up the walls. I remember the lead weight on the key, so you couldn't nick the key. Anyway, we tipped up in tuxedos. We went to Cannes. We went to South France in tuxedos, me and Dave. I'll never forget Joe Pitka walking along the seafront. Mike, you know, from when me and you have been in the bar like years later. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was in a tuxedo. I went to flipping Cannes in a tuxedo. It was bizarre, but it was really weird. The whole experience, like this, you know, year in it and winning that. And, you know, I remember it hammering down as well. So soaking wet through in a tux. It was quite surreal. I remember going to Tractor's party in a tuxedo, which was, would have been quite surreal in itself.
Yeah.
And not going to bed and getting on a plane and coming back with this gold lion. Yeah, it was a long, long time ago. Yeah, blimey. Yeah.
And so I might have gone, but this isn't about me. So I got fired before some other stuff happened with you.
You went straight to Abbott Mead, didn't you? Both of you.
We did. We got Mike let us go / fired us or whatever it was in say October, and then we kind of took the sort of a bit of time over Christmas, and then ended up back at Abbott Mead in.
That's right.
And I just as one little aside, because we're talking about Mike Cousins and. So I was at DNAD, I think that year, talking to Steve Hudson in the pub outside. Because you remember, and maybe it still is, DNAD always seems to happen on the day of the European Cup final. So we were in the pub across the street watching the football, and Mike was there. And I was like, I still had post-traumatic stress disorder from being fired. So I'm talking to Steve, and I went, oh shit, there's my old boss, and whatever. And clearly he knew we'd ended up at AMV, and he came right up to me. Shook my hand and said something like, what can I say? I was wrong. And then
brilliant.
Left. And I was like, that was such a big man thing to do. He really didn't have to do it. It was a lovely gesture. And I would also reflect on, he was probably right, actually, to let us go. And we needed a kick up the ass. But, you know, for him to come along and say that in the pub was great. And we loved working for Mike. He was a little bit... He was this big sort of bear kind of guy, if anyone hasn't met him.
He was. The size of his, do you remember the size of his thighs? He used to swing his leg over and he would sit there cross-legged with like R.M. Williams on and have a thigh the size of an ox. It was, you're right. I remember he'd be just sort of shit there. You're absolutely right. Yeah. That's a brilliant thing in him to do that. I mean, it was because I remember we were all like gobsmacked when that had happened. I remember it now.
Yeah.
And then when all of a sudden we were like, the boys are at Abbott Mead, and we were like, wow, the boys are at Abbott Mead.
That was a weird, it was like, oh, fuck knows. I mean, anyway, but this is about you. So what happened, I mean, in terms of you getting together with Dave, and then, because I think some other people left, and then Mike got kicked upstairs to Europe, and what actually went on there?
So what happened, so my old partner, so we did St. Mungo's, and we also got put together because I was, as you probably know, mad on fishing, and so was my old partner, and we were both mental on fishing, and my partner said, you know what, I'm gonna move to Canada. And I was like, what? He goes, I want to move to Canada. And I was like, why? He said, well, there's massive fish there and there's carp and I can do all this, that and the other, and I just want to complete that life change. And I was like, right, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then I was thinking at the same time, oh my god, at the same time, I think he'd been on holiday a few times, and Dave had said to Mike, I really like, he was with Sam at the time, I really like the stuff Rich is doing, and I'm thinking I want to have a change. And I like him. And we had done, I think we did a Colgate dive ad, which we ended up going to Glen Canyon Dam. It was same time that Bond ad come out. I mean, it was just shit. The whole idea would have been good had it not ended up like that. The whole idea of someone deep diving off of a dam and then to get this sensation toothpaste. But it meant we had the most epic of shoots. We had a week in Amsterdam shooting a giant toothbrush on motion control that kept breaking down. A week in a studio, you can only imagine. And then we had a week and a half, 2 weeks in LA, and then going out to Glen Canyon Dam, and oh, it was insane. And this guy was Hollywood. He was like, we had the top Hollywood's top aerial stunt photographer, and then this guy that literally jumped off of Glen Canyon Dam on this rope, not even a bungee, because if he'd been on a bungee, he would have hit the wall. So we did that, and we started getting on. And then Dave then said to me, and you know, oh, I might be moving on with someone else, and then a few weeks, and I was like, oh God, here we go. And then a few weeks later, I said, no, do you know what? I'm going to stay put. And at roughly the same time, we were pitching for Carphone Warehouse, and we won it. That was our first pitch together, and we won it. The very next day, they announced that we were merging with Rainey Kelly. So within a day of winning Carphone Warehouse, we lost it because Rainey Kelly had Virgin Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
And funny enough, Carphone Warehouse then went on to, what was it? It went on to Clemo be the Hornby. First client. Yeah, for Clemo Hornby. How funny is that? We had the line. I'll never forget the line in the work. It was brilliant. It was service beyond the call. And it never got made. Yeah. So we did that, and we were shooting lots of stuff together, and, you know, Rainey Kelly come along, which was, you know, it was sad to see. You know, we were loyal with Mike, but Mike moved upstairs, and we used to go up and sit and chat to him. But then all of a sudden we had Robert and Mark in there, who was super exciting, and obviously you had Pip and Chris and Graham and Phil and Martha and Richard and all these new creatives that were just like, wow, you know. And some of the ads, you know, Richard and Martha had just done, they'd done the Virgin Grim Reaper, which me and Richard met each other at Cannes that year with you know, because they got a gold line for that. It was a brilliant bit of work. There was Mike and Jerry there. And also come with it pitching from Ford, because we all, do you remember, we all had Ford to working on Land Rover, and we all got involved, and that sort of started our sort of journey with Robert and Mark. Robert and Mark at the time, I kept a scrapbook when I was at college of ads. I was going for them a few weeks ago, and I, do you remember Robert and Mark's Cages Saved Lives with the
for Volvo.
Yeah, for Volvo, and I had that in there, so it was like all of a sudden I was going to get to work with them, you know. So it was sad as it was. It was a lucky transition, because it felt like a whole new agency again. And, you know, some of us stayed and some of us didn't. And I was in that building for 8.5 years, but it felt like two agencies,
right. You know,
and you had Jim Kelly, who was a brilliant, brilliant CEO, and MT Ray, who was an incredible planning director. And then also, don't forget, James Murphy was there.
Oh, yeah.
There was Andy Nairn was there. I mean, there was an incredible planning department. But, you know, we stayed and did a lot of Land Rover. Been anywhere interesting lately was the thing that I think I'd say I was most proud of at that time. We did a Busta Rhymes ad for Virgin Media off of Richard and Martha's brilliant Devil Makes Work for Idle Thumbs, which was great. Do you remember that? Ron Wycliffe? But, you know, learned a bit of craft about posters. I think more posters there, because they were just the masters of them at the time. I think they were, you know, obviously Abbott Mead and The Economist and everything, but they were doing some really good stuff with Virgin Atlantic. It was just a brilliant thing to work on.
That was great. So, you did some lovely Land Rover TV as well. And so, did you have a plan to leave? Were you poached? Because was it Saatchi next?
It was after that. It was Saatchi. We didn't have a plan to go anywhere. We were getting a bit of interest from some agencies, and we were chatting to people, and we got told, we were like, even the people that we weren't interested in. Someone said to us, even if you don't want to go there, go and talk to them.
Yeah.
Always go and talk to people, because it's really good practice. You don't know if they're going to be your boss one day, or at the very least, it just gets you in a mindset. And what it does do is actually prepares your, you know, you end up having a portfolio. you know, and so we were doing all that, and we were chatting to, we had chats with people from McCann's and different agencies, but there was a clear, need to sort of, I think, take the next step. Then we got a call from a recruiter saying that Saatchi's are interested and would like to have a chat with you. And we were like, oh, that was when Tony Granger was there. And Dave Droger had just gone. I think Dave was talking to Dave Droger with an early before, you know, that moment he was going to, right at the beginning when we started chatting, he went to see Dave a few times, but Dave had gone then. So Tony Granger had come in and they wanted to have a chat with us. So we went over to speak to Saatchi's, and it was going through a different transition. Again, I think, you know, obviously all the talent, and there was Dave, and then there was Ant and Mike, and there was so many talented people, and they'd all done brilliant stuff, and then they'd all been poached and moved on. So it was almost like starting again, if you like.
Yeah.
So we thought, well, that's an interesting project. Rather than go and join them all, what can we do and add to that, and maybe, you know, have a look at some new briefs, I suppose, and see what else there is. So we headed off to Saatchi's, yeah.
And what was it like under Tony then? What was he like as a CD?
Tony's a character. He wasn't there that long, funny enough. We got to make a TV program with out when we first got to Saatchi's on Sagachiba. We did this documentary, yeah. And this, it was so funny. It was really quite surreal. There were some very cringy moments in that. But we made a TV
program. I remember you guys being on TV. Yeah, because that Sagachiba, that was like our new drink, spirit, and you guys were on
it
TV.
It was, because Sasha, yeah, we did this documentary. They followed us around for weeks, and it was meant to be about the whole of Saatchi's and all that, and it ended up just being about me and Dave. It was quite funny, and they followed us. We ended up with this camera rig on my Volkswagen Polo, because me and Dave used to drive in together. We lived near each other, so we drove in, and then we drove home, and they followed us around, and I think I was having my first child came along, so I couldn't go on the shoot, so that for them, I was like, brilliant, got a bit of drama here, right, it's going to go off to Brazil and shoot this print campaign. But Tony was a good character. What he was, I'd say more than anything though, he was proactive. He loved proactive behaviour. I think, you know, he wanted stuff to be noisy. There was a little bit at the time of, you know, what can we do and get noticed at Cannes and all of that. But on the whole, it was about what can we do to make fame and be noisy. And we were in there trying to sort of take the brands that no one wanted to touch and make them famous, if you like. So at the time, there was the Carlsberg campaign, Carlsberg Don't Do, and it just felt for us it was a bit generic. So we were like, what can we do to make that brand famous and take on the stuff that no one really wanted to, like Visa, you know, it was all... They were all kind of a bit generic, I suppose, if I'd be honest. So we were like, what can we do to mark our stamp? And our first bit of work that we came out with was the we did a couple of things before. We did a little bit for NSPCC when they did a Childline campaign with masks, with children's faces, don't have to hide it anymore. Yeah. And then we did Old Lions, which was brilliant. That was the thing for us. So we did a lot of work quite quickly. So we weren't there that long. I think maybe 3-4 years. But that was our big thing, Old Lions, which was meant to be a 30-second ad during the World Cup, which ended up as 3 minutes long.
Yeah, I wonder if there was... because my wife was at Gorgeous when you sent
That's
it
right.
in. And... she said that there was another version of the script before, and then it turned into that afterwards. So I wonder if there's any more detail to go into about it, because I think for a lot of people, it's one of the sort of, I guess, a bit of a modern classic. It's a really, really great ad, but I think it's sort of endlessly rewatchable. But was it easy to come up with? Was it totally proactive? Was the brief out there?
No, it was a brief. It was genuinely a brief. It was a brief for the World Cup. And Kevin Chesters was the planner on it, who I loved a bit. And I remember And then Peter Lovett, who's now, I think he's now the chairman of Sarches, he was our account lead. And basically, it was Scottish and Newcastle, and they said, look, we want to do an ad during the World Cup. We're not sponsors. So we all said to him, look, if you're going to do something during the World Cup, you want to own the World Cup. And they sort of laughed at us and said, yeah, right. At the same time, we were doing a brief for Tetley's. We did a campaign called Tetley's Don't Do Things by Half.
Right.
And so these were working side by side. And we said, look, you really don't want to do the same as everyone else. You're going to have loads and loads of football stars showing you their silky smooth skills, and you'll see some really incredible Nike stuff, and there'll be Reebok and all that. And you've got to stand out, plus all the beer ads. And they went, yeah, right, how are we going to do that? And we went, well, we'll give it a go. There was a few ads that we wrote and other teams wrote, that because we were creative directing on it, and they didn't make the cut. And then we had a thought on best pub team in the world. But it wasn't 3 minutes long. It was a quick version, and it was a team of celebrities playing a team of punters. And we had this script, and we sent it out to Chris. It went out to, I'll never forget it, it went out to, it also went out to John Glazer and a few others. And I remember being in on holiday in France with my family, and I remember Dave ringing up and going, oh my God, Jonathan Glazer has been on it. And we were like, oh my God, this is incredible. And then, oh my God, Chris Palmer's bitten on it. And then we got some feedback. We were going to chat to him, and John basically said, well, I'm not the man for this. This is Chris Palmer. Wow. He'd done that Adidas ad. Do you remember? He'd done that brilliant Adidas Beckham. I think it was Beckham.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with Johnny Thingy, the rugby player.
It. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And anyway, we went to see Chris down at Gorgeous, and Chris said, I remember Chris, when we first saw him, his opening line was, how much do you want me to pay you to make this?
That's great.
I mean, complete and utter passionate football fanatic beyond belief. Anyway, we get to shoot this ad, and that didn't come without it. We get this to pick the team. Obviously, trying to pick a pub team was, you know, a football team is interesting itself, because some of the stars that we might have want were ex-alcoholics, so you can't have them in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And rightly, and so it comes with all of that. And then there's a budget that comes with all of it. And then we got all of them, I think, if I remember rightly, back in then, it was like, I think it was something like 125 grand for all of them.
Wow.
All of them. but what it was divided up. The agent had worked it out. But what the ones we got, one, so the moment we got Sir Bobby Robson, the people that we wanted that had first turned it down, their reply was then afterwards, yes, Gaff. Because okay. He started ringing them going, you're going to play a football match. Yes, Gaff. Yes, Gaff. Seriously, it was, I'll never forget. So we went up and shot this new Tetley's ad. And then we drove down overnight and tipped up on our set the next day with all these Winnebagoes everywhere. And then we went up to get some bacon sandwiches, and they were all standing there.
Oh my God.
And it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Anyway, it had its ups and downs before with a client, and I remember a younger client sort of measuring the size of the Carlsberg logo on the T-shirt, and we were like, you don't have to worry about that. And they were like, no, this is silly. And we're like, you don't have to worry about it. People know it's a Carlsberg ad. And he got a bit upset. And Chris said, well, you can't tell that lot to stop, can you? Let's just get on. I promise you it'll be good. And we went into the dressing room, and he was filming stuff. The magic of Chris, how he wanted to do it. And it was tricky, because the client at first, they were saying, look, we want everything scripted. We're like, you can't script everything. Chris wants to play it like it. Chris sat in a van with them all. You know, like Dog and Duck. Who's marking the dog? I am. Chris would tee him up with stuff. And a lot of that stuff is what they wanted to say. You know, Chris magically did things like, we did things like, you know, dye stuff on purpose, like the pink shirt.
Right.
You know, the pink shirt. So pulled it out of the bag, and then things like Chris rang him and he goes, who's that? That's me mum. You know, that was Chris playing around with them. That wasn't, some of that stuff wasn't scripted, but the client couldn't get their head around it. So trying to force them to just trust us was tricky. Anyway, the pub thing, it was all done for real. Once we shot it all, we then did a few pickup shots. But other than that, it was all captured for real. And Chris, so we went off, and then Chris went, right, I'm super excited. I think it took longer than we wanted to see. I think with Paul and everything, with the edit and all that. And the first cut we saw was 7 minutes long. And don't forget, we're meant to be looking at, I think it was a 30 and a 40. And anyway, we showed this to the client and they were like freaking out, 7 minutes long. And anyway, we got managed to get it down to 3 minutes because we were like, you're not going to be out in air a 7 minute ad. And it was getting shared around the agency, and it was getting shared around the client's families, and everyone was getting excited about it. And on the back of it, basically, Sky, it was Soccer AM and all, like, they all loved it so much, they gave the full length version for the price of a 60.
Wow.
To the client, basically. Yeah. They were buzzing back then at this. I mean, it was if you like, it was like long, it was content, wasn't it? It's long format film back then. So they were giving all of this for free because they loved it so much. And then we did all the little edits and all the little cut downs off the back of that. And anyway, it did go on to outsell Carlin 4-1 during the World Cup.
Amazing.
So, you know, it was brilliant. And again, learning a lot from sort of performances from sports people that, you know, might not necessarily be able to act, or allowing space to, you know, be nimble and just allow for error and allow for unscripted stuff. And I think, you know, you take things like that on, just allowing that sort of bit of freedom rather than, you know, the little fault or the little thing. And I learned a lot from that.
That's great. So yeah, you said you were only there a few years, and then so did DDB come knocking, or again was that you or them?
Yeah, so we'd done that. We were cutting. We'd just shot Visa Running Man.
Oh yeah,
the dude, naked dude.
Yeah.
And we got a call from DDB saying Jeremy Cragan would like to see if you want to have a chat. And I mean, to be honest, the moment that I heard those words, I was like, yeah, definitely. For me, it was one of the places that I'd always aspired to work at. You know, there was a great creative department at Saatchi's, really talented people and good people and a good culture. But, you know, the dudes that were over at DDB and the brands that they had and everything, it was just, me and Dave used to certainly say it was like finishing school before we went on to DLKW. And we went to see Jeremy. Funny enough, we'd seen him a few years earlier because Ewan was giving me and Dave a little book crit and looking at our portfolio, and he'd come in from a night out. I think he'd been at one of the award shows and had seen our Land Rover stuff, our Gord and all that, and he was like, yeah, don't like that, taking the mickey out of us. Anyway, we ended up going to see him, and we had a chat with him, and it was a no-brainer, and we headed off to DDB. Yeah, it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
I don't know, from the outside, it seemed like you guys had a bit of a, I don't know, special relationship. Like, you seemed to, I wasn't in the office with you, whatever. There just seemed to be something about the briefs you guys seemed to get on and the ads that you seemed to make. Like, you were making a lot of the most high-profile stuff out of DDB at that time. So was I right? Did you get on with Jeremy really well? And is that how it happened?
We I tell you what, there was so much going on. I mean, he loved the department equally. I mean, when you walked into that department, whether you had just started out or you'd been there 10 years, 15 years, even longer, everyone got a crack at the whip and everyone had opportunity. I remember the first brief we ever got was for Harvey Nichols. And we were like, yes, we've got Harvey Nichols. And someone turned around walking past and went, yeah, you and everyone else, mate. Because everyone else was so competitive in a friendly way. Yeah. And you'll know this from being at Abbott Mead. Everyone else was hungry to do the best work that they could do and be inspired by those around them. But if they lost to another team in a piece of work, you shook hands and you supported them. You went, that was brilliant. So you'd go in and see him and show him stuff. And we shared some stuff with him. And I'll tell you something in a minute, which will make you laugh. But he would go and say, I love that. Now go and speak to Grant and see, get some things on him and see what he thinks about, you know, like art direction. Or go and chat to Fergal and Patrick. Or do you know what I mean? Just go and chat to some of the others and get a vibe. And that was really, really unifying. I mean, he really cared about everyone, the things that when we used to go to Cannes together, and it was like a family. And I think that was really, really important from a cultural perspective of a department, and someone being behind you, giving you the freedom to create your best possible work. But he was also brilliantly, and still is brilliantly, strategic, so that he could tell you very quickly why it was wrong and where you'd gone wrong with it, and also about learning about coming off stuff. I remember we did some early Volkswagen ads and he was like, absolutely wrong, got tone of voice is wrong. He gave us Bill Birnbach's book, and he said, go away and study that, and then and have a read of it, properly have a read of it. And yeah, we started writing stuff, but there was lots of briefs coming in. There was, you know, pitches going on. We won Virgin Media while we were there and stuff. But we also, I remember me and Dave working, we did this Volkswagen ad before Darth Vader come out, right? I'll never forget this. So we worked a weekend, and we had this end line, which was tough but looking good, right? And it was about being tough and good-looking polo. And we worked over the weekend, and it was about Darth Vader being out and about and having his stormtroopers with him and just looking sharp and all that. And we went in on the – me and Dave had a chink to drink together. We cracked it. And we went to share it to Jeremy on the Monday morning. And Dave's reading it, and I'm looking at Jeremy as his feet are wincing at every line Dave's saying. And then Dave got to the end line – and he winced, and he went, he winced, and he went, did you come in for the weekend for that? And we went, yeah. He went, fucking hell, never, ever, ever work a weekend again. So that's quite possibly, he said, can I have it? And we handed it over. He said, I'm pinning that on my wall. That's the worst Volkswagen script I've ever heard. And for a few weeks, we had creatives walking past going, doing like Darth Vader impressions, and but so that was the camaraderie. I mean, after that, we ended up doing Tango, but it was so funny. But you didn't take it personally. There was a brilliant bit of banter, and you know, you could see that. I mean, you could see it with you guys at, you know, Abbott Meads. You know, every team was knocking it. You know, you go to an award show, and everyone would be getting up. No one didn't get up. Everyone on the table did. Same as Abbott Meads. You know, you'd watch all these teams, and you all got behind each other. It was, you know, super inspiring. And you learned. I learned so much about craft there. Unbelievable. The head of design and the art buying. You know, you would go in with suggestions, and they go, "That's great, but have you thought about this photographer, or have you thought about this design, have you thought about this typography or illustrator?" And you learn so much about, and even with scripts, about, you know, less is more, coming off of it, you know, not necessarily playing it for laughs, allowing the space for it. You know, if you think about like a great Volkswagen ad where, you know, like sort of extraordinary prices, or, you know, like the guy spitting out his coffee, not yeah. showing that, just cutting away and hearing it, you know, less, really clever little touches. And that's what I think the genius, not only strategic, and then the way that they did the storytelling, whether it's print or poster or film, but the way that they've handled it and beautifully, you know, just, you know, you learn a lot from less is more, I think, on stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just interested in what you just said about VW, though, because I wouldn't say Last Tango fits in with the Birnbach angle of VW. It seems like a little bit of a tonal departure, not in a bad way, but it just feels slightly different.
It was. In all fairness, it was. I mean, we had. They wanted to do something a bit different and a bit punchier. We didn't end up with the line that we wanted. It wasn't going to be that. That wasn't the first. That wasn't the first execution on that. The first script that we had on. I think the line was, because the end line we ended up with was Tough, Beautiful Polo. Mm-hmm. I think our line at the time was a lot more Birnbach-esque. I think it was something like Tough Can Be Beautiful or something. It was more of a, you know, colloquial, I suppose, is what I'm saying, rather than just bullet points.
Yeah.
That come too late. That got changed once we'd shot it. And I think there was a European thing that got involved and all that. It wasn't originally the script. The original script was to shoot it. John Glazer wanted to shoot it in Compton for real with all hidden cameras.
Right.
I think he did a piece, or he just about to do a piece, or a piece came afterwards. Do you remember his Adidas where it was all hidden cameras in downtown LA?
Oh, yeah.
And that was his, what he wanted to do was get the two world's tango dancers and get them to dance through Compton and then capture reactions and stuff and do it like that. And we were all like, wow, this is going to be incredible. But it was just too expensive. It was way too expensive, and the client couldn't afford it. The client loved it, but couldn't afford it. So we went down the way that we did in the studio. So it was quite inventive. It was the first time people ever played around with like GoPro in some of the shots and things. But it was quite punchy, and they were up for something of having a bit of a step change. they generally wanted to do something that was a bit more, had a bit more oomph and a bit more punching it, I suppose. But yeah, the line wasn't the line that we really wanted on the end. But as Jeremy said, he said, look, we just get it out and we move on to the next thing. You know, it was funny. We had on Virgin Media, when we did Our House, the music that we ended up with, we shot it with Seb Edwards. That wasn't the music. The music we had was Mike Skinner, The Streets.
Right.
He was going to, you know, that was going to be the anthem on it. And the day before we released it, he changed his mind.
Oh.
So we had to change the music, and it would have changed. The ad was nice. It was really beautifully shot. Seb's such a talent. But it wasn't the music we wanted. And I was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken about that. But Jeremy was like, well, you've done it now. We move on to the next thing. And I think that was a nice thing to sort of learn as well. You know, everything we've done, I suppose you can look at it and go, I could change that, do this, do that. Yeah. Just get it out of there and make it.
What I sometimes get asked by people is, how, and it's not just asked by, but there's a point where you get invited to the ECD table. And either you get invited or you make it happen yourself, whatever. Because it's quite a big sort of jump up, because you've got there's this sort of job title, creative director, which is, you know, checking out people's work and seeing if it's good or not, or whatever. But then when you're ECD, you've got meetings about P&L and hiring and firing, and the head office says 10% cuts here or whatever there. So you're in a much different job. And that was the jump you guys made from DDB to, you called it DLKW, so you didn't think of it as low or anything then, or what was the, or what
no,
was the thing?
No, Mullen come later on. It was DLK, it was DLKW low.
Right.
And, you know, we funny enough, we got approached by Abbott Mead as well.
Oh.
And we nearly went to Abbott Mead, and it was like, oh yeah. And we actually had contracts as well, funny enough, but something just didn't feel quite right. So we didn't go there, and something I said to Dave that, you know, I felt like something else might be coming, and it did. And we got approached to go to DLKW, and purely because it was DLKW and it had low in it, but this was, you know, Delaney Lunnox Warren that had done sort of Halifax, and, you know, yeah, they'd done sort of lots of sing songs and things. And I thought, what a brilliant, brilliant challenge. Partner, you know, with these guys, and we went to meet them, and Tom Knox was absolutely incredible. Richard Warren, Charlie Snow, what an incredible planner, a really good friend now, brilliant, brilliant man. And we were sort of sold on the vision of, you know, having the chance to rebuild and to turn it into something. And Michael Wall was obviously the global boss of Lowe's, you know, IPG and everything, and so that was a no-brainer as well. So We thought, you know, let's go over there. I remember telling Jeremy, because I remember him saying, you know, you never ever want to be an ECD. Just one day it'll happen. He was really shocked at first. He was like, really, you sure? Are you sure you want to do this? And it was really, I think it was the first time it was really hard to go, you know, it wasn't, you know, he made us think about it first. Everything else until then, wherever we went, was a no-brainer. This was the first time we were like, right, this is where we are. This is what we're doing, but look at where people go when they leave here. If you think about, you know, and I'm, you know, the creatives that go on to run agencies, DDB had so many go on to run so many incredible things. And I wouldn't even class myself anywhere near those dudes that, you know, went on to, you know, make Wydens in London famous, or Fallon or anything like that. But, you know, inspiring to see where they go. So it was like, yeah, let's give it a go. And we got the chance to do it the way that we did it, and for a couple of years it went really well, and then it was just like a massive smack in the face, because, you know, pitches and business and everything, but we learned loads from it, and I think we took lots of things from there, from DDB, the culture of the department, and everyone, you know, looking after everyone and making sure that, you know, there was a collaborative department. I mean, I know people freak out about the word collaborative, but more importantly about sharing your stuff with each other to improve it. You know, the head of art buying there, Gary, was been low all his life and was unique, unbelievable talent, almost an art director himself. So, you know, it was a no-brainer trying to find the talent and the head of arts and, you know, new people. In fact, Gabby was helped us bring some talent in.
Yeah, Chris and Frank.
Yeah, no, not just Chris and Fran. So what we did when we went there, we had to we didn't go straight in, with massive swords. We took our time and then decided where we thought we needed strength, and craft was really important. There were still some good people there, but a lot of good people had left. So we highlighted the things that we wanted to do. So I remember ringing, I think it was Lizzie Gower, James Studholme, and a couple of others. I think Charlie Crompton, so the production companies that we work with and really knew well. And I said, who's the best producers out there? So that's how we got Trudy Waldron in. And then Gabby used to come in and see us, and I said, what talent out there have you seen that's really, really inspiring? And she said Chris and Fran, and then I think she said Matt and Helen, and she was like, wow, she was brilliant. I mean, it was brilliant, but it was an interesting way of looking at it, because these people were actually in there chatting and telling. And I mean, Chris and Fran, my God, I love those two, still do to this day. What an incredible talent those two are, and what lovely people with it. Matt and Helen are really talented as well, but just really, really good people that I hadn't really had eyes on until, in all fairness, Gabby had shared them. So we were looking at things differently on how we could influence and get different teams in and build it like that. But as with anything, it's a big, big, big business and a big old ship. It comes with trying to win pitches and making the right decisions and stuff like that. And that is hard. And we were like, oh, this is easy. No, it's not. It's absolutely hard. And it was like literally like, oh, you're doing quite well. You did some nice things. Bang, there you go, have that. It's like, oh, shit. And I think for me as well, it was hard in the sense that, you're trying to sort of keep Unilever projects and keep business going and everything like that, and also try and keep the teams inspired and enthused, but at the same time being honoured when they go off to work at the likes of Adam and Eve or Wydens stuff, and not be disheartened, because it means you've done something right and they're getting the best opportunity. So trying to give creatives the best opportunity they can to make themselves famous, but at the same time trying to run a business is complete, as you know, is a completely different beast in itself. So maybe I was quite young at it, but it was very, very stressful, very, very stressful, but a learning curve. Definite learning curve and a quick one.
Yeah, it's funny because Daryl and I did about 6 months at Low on freelance in 2009, I think, and my God, it was on its knees at that point. It was like, we have some international SIF business, and then there's some Norse stuff. And Lee Goulding was there at the time. Was he there when?
That's right.
When you were there,
he was. He was there with Tom. Yeah, he was there for a while. And there was a few others there. But that's the other thing as well is a lot of those formulas were working, and they didn't want changing.
Yeah.
And they weren't the things to change either. So you had to sort of try and find opportunity to attract talent. You know what it's like.
Yeah, but when you did like the Morrisons, was it Morrisons the Truth ad? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so, that's with Matt and Helen, yeah.
But to me, that's a real departure, because it's like, I mean, I don't know how difficult or easy it was to sell, but to get a supermarket to do a sort of not hey, we're all happy and larking and dancing around Christmas ad, is to me, it was a much better standout, different ad that told the truth about Christmas. So how was that process?
That has been, for a while, that was a really contentious ad for us after we made that, because that ad was polarizing. I mean, I'm still incredibly proud of it, because, strategically, John Lewis was in its early stages. Morrison's had, there was the opportunity to go away from sort of celebrities and all that sort of stuff and do something that had a bit more depth and a bit more truth, and that sort of pushed the team to sort of crack it and said, look, look at the truths, it's, have a look at it from this angle and then look at that, and let's dramatise that, but we'll have to have a sense of humour in it. So Matt and Helen wrote that wonderful script, and we had some great sense of humour in it. It went out there. I remember when we saw it, we were in tears. I remember the client was in tears and everyone was pleased. And then the boss who's not the boss of Morrison's anymore, he was pleased, but the business wasn't in the best place for it, I think, at the time. And the ad got the blame for it. It was also quite polarizing. So you would either have half of society going, I absolutely love this. Yeah, my Christmas is like that, but I wouldn't have it any other way. Because that's what you say at the end, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And half of people are like, I really want it to be just happy. You know, it won loads of awards. It divided opinions. So for a while, we weren't allowed to talk about it because we all got the blame. But it's interesting. It's really, really interesting, that sort of polarizing work for a business. And, you think about the market and the people that use Morrisons and stuff. And then you look at society and how they view it. You know, you ask a question at a time and you go, is it the right thing to do something that's going to be polarizing? Or you know, I tell you what's a really good observation. Did you like the IKEA rap ad? Where they're basically in it, the dinosaurs talking and all the characters.
I didn't, but for a different reason. I didn't because I don't want people to keep buying more shit for no reason.
I know what you mean.
I liked it as an ad. I thought it was a really fun ad. Yeah, I liked it in that way. I didn't like the thing behind it, but yeah.
No, if we look at the context of what's going on, all of those ornaments and all of those items in that house are basically saying your house is a shithole.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which actually, you're telling me that my house is a tip or a dump, and just look at it, you know, someone wouldn't even come over, you know, but it's done in such a funny way and quite fresh that you enjoy it. And I think if you look at that versus, you know, what we did with the truth, you know, there is some funny moments, but maybe it needed more funny moments than it did the sad side. But maybe that's a musical thing. But I'm still equally as proud of it. But it's an interesting thing when you come to, you know, doing a piece of work that you're going to put out there, and you've got to think about the sort of the business behind it. What is it, you know, what state is it in to be able to go out and do that? Is the strategy absolutely bang on and the tone of voice to be able to go and do that? You know, I think IKEA is wonderful every day. It's so sound for such a number of years. You can then have a play at the audience, but you can do it in a tone of voice that makes it acceptable. And I think, you know, maybe Morrisons wasn't in that right at that time as a business ready for something like that. So we learned a lot from it.
Cool. And for me, it gets a little bit like, I can't tell exactly what happens at this point, just looking from the outside. When did you and Dave stop working together?
So we stopped working together in, when was it, 2017. So I think it was, 2017. I think it was then.
That's a long run.
Which for me, it was 18 years, 18 wow. and a half years. I mean, in all fairness, if being an old romantic, I didn't want it to stop. I would have, right. I love Dave to bits. And I had this sort of envisaged us growing as you know, old men together, maybe sitting in a nursing home one day writing ads together. But I think the problem is, the difference is, as you know, is what comes with that is when you become sort of ECDs or CCOs and stuff, you know, and then especially the way the industry was shaping and changing, there isn't many creative duos anymore. And Dave decided it was time to move on, and you know, we generally weren't going to be able to walk into another job together like that, which for me, I found tough. I found it really, really hard. If I'd be brutally honest, it generally, you know, I stayed behind for a bit and I thought I'd give it a go. And then it wasn't the thing that I really, really wanted, but it broke my heart and I found it hard. It's only recently, you know, I mean, the best thing that ever happened to me after that was going to go to work at St. Luke's with Neil and Al and everyone, and sort of get a bit of confidence back again. Because I don't know about you and Daryl, you know, your partner has always got your back, and you've got their back, and you've got that sounding board. Even no matter what level you are, you've always got that thing together, and you kind of know each other, and you know how each other ticks. And I missed that, and it freaked me out for a bit. I found it hard. We're still producing some good stuff, and you know, obviously your teams around you and all those people become your partner because they're, you know, that's your team. But that sort of synergy between you two to be there for each other, I found that difficult to adjust to for some time.
Yeah, I totally get that. But now you are at St. Luke's, and you've done probably the most famous ad of the lockdown, which is great, the SHN.
Thank you.
NHS round. I did get right, SHN. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
So how's it all going there? And is that like a new lease of life for you, or is it?
It is. It absolutely is. I think what's brilliant is with regards to sort of St. Luke's, you know, there isn't, you know, it's an independent agency, so it isn't owned by anyone else. So you do your own thing. What it is as well is, you know, if you walk into the building, there's no silos. There's no little teams that are broken away. And we always try to do that. Even with the OKW low that is now, hello, on pockets, we wanted everyone to feel like they're part of the same thing. And that business has always been about that. You know, you could walk into the office and you wouldn't know by looking, there was no hierarchical web where anyone's sitting. You were all in it together. It's very different in the sense that there isn't this you must win attitude. Right. Because, you know, you can only do your best, and you're at the lap of the gods whether the client's going to go, I want you or not. Whereas we've all worked, we've got to win this. We have to win this. This is it. We have to win it. I was told when we were there, you must win. We need to win this. And, you know, you can give it your best shot,
yeah,
but it might not necessarily happen. So there was that kind of thing, and we would pitch and go up against people and pitch more than once and win. But everyone felt that it wasn't, you know, the bosses weren't going to come down on you. You know, we were all in it together. And interestingly, when you got involved in something in a pitch, people would roll their sleeves and go, can I help you? You know, it's everyone got stuck in. And then the other thing is I remember the first time we did a pitch, we're like, right, are we in tomorrow at weekend? Nope, we don't work weekends. Wow. Really? No. And I've probably done one Sunday since I've been there. I mean, I've been working most weekends now, but I'm enjoying it. It's a different thing, this situation we're in now. But everyone works hard and then tries to rest up at the weekend. And that's actually quite fresh in business. And St. Luke's, as you know, I mean, it's been around the same amount of time that we've been doing it.
Yeah.
A year before us, was very groundbreaking in the way that it did business. I mean, it got in Harvard. As being the most terrifying business out there, because it made everyone equal partners, which, yeah, you know, didn't work for a while. It worked for a while, and, you know, but they were always groundbreaking in the way that they approached business and things. I think they were the original sort of, you know, they started just the sort of kind of tissue things, and you know, they were quite a disruptive business, born off the back of, what was the agency it was born off the back of? I think it was Crispin Porter's, was it?
Shite Day.
Sorry, Shite Day. I should know this. I work there. off of Shite Day. And, you know, they kind of retained that, and they had some really exciting times. You remember when we were at Wynar, you know, they won Eurostar off of us with Cantona, and they launched so many things. They launched IKEA. They were IKEA's global account holder at first. You know, if you think about things like chuck out your chintz, yes, and you know, they did some really sort of
boots number seven makeup stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I went in to meet those guys, and they take ages hiring people because, you know, you walk in there and there isn't anyone which you're not, you know, everyone's really up for each other and rooting for each other. They take their time getting it, but they're a people person agency. They, like, you know, I think like most agents would say, but they genuinely really want everyone to succeed. So they have these things like make yourself more interesting and send people out on funds. We've had people, got a creative, Polina, she's a bloody helicopter pilot now. Wow. She started off with her fund to train out to be a helicopter. We've had yoga teachers. A lot of, some of the people that have come through St. Luke's have got their own businesses now and started, you know, yeah. So, you know, if you're in a good headspace, then you're in the best place you can be to produce the best work possible for work. And I found that was actually quite a refreshing place, and it quickly got the freedom to sort of, you know, be supported and get your confidence back. And they care about people and their confidence. And I think that's what's been refreshing. And also a let's do it attitude. Let's do it. Yeah, we can do this. Why not? You know, and that's with the SHN thing. I think if I'd been anywhere else, people may have been nervous about actually even putting it out there. We had a chat the day that I had that thought, and I messaged Al, and he was like, oh my God, this is great. And, you know, and then Neil, and they went, fuck it, let's do it. And we did it. And I mean, it's been insane. Where we've got to with that and the people that have been involved and everything, but a can-do attitude and a hunger to sort of do something to make a difference, which is part of the strategic thinking of the place, you know, and I think that's what's really nice, and branding and design worlds and things that have got a clear, simple purpose. So yeah, it's going quickly as well. It's mad. But we're having lots of Zoom chats and things. But yeah, it's been I'm enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it. It's actually and I think for the first time, and especially during this sort of lockdown, you know they're my mates and everything, and it's the first time I'd say in the last year or two that I feel like, or I'd say the last few months, where you know me and Dave keep in touch, but I'm doing my thing now. Do you know what I mean? It feels quite nice like that, you know. And I love old Davey, who's like my other half, you know. But I think I've kind of got that out, moved on from that now, I suppose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think it helps probably that my LinkedIn feed is often full of Atomics doing something quite good or interesting, and St. Luke's as well. So it's good that you got. I mean, I think maybe there's different things happen when one goes off in one more high profile direction than another, but it feels like you're both kind of maintaining something really good, so that must be good for.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Yeah, well, it's you feed off of each other as well. It's like Dave sort of drops your notes as well down, and I'm like, oh, I love that. I mean, he's when he did his I think it was the Royal Opera.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, I was jealous as fuck. I was like, fucking hell, mate, that is just brilliant. Why didn't you do that with me? You know, but I was so proud of him to do that, and the writing was incredible, and the art direction was really, really good. And seeing the things that he's done, and you know, Dave works his ass off, and you know, it's lovely to see him to do really well. So we're always bigging each other up, and you know, shouting each other out, and checking in on each other. So yeah, it's great.
Well, that's great, and I feel like that's a nice positive. Well, I mean, we're kind of at the modern part of the story anyway, so it's not like there's another stage to go through, but it feels like it's a really good positive note to end on. So I think the story's been a fascinating kind of move from one place to another for, you know, different reasons, doing different work, learning different things, and you know, here you are now in what seems like a good space, and you know, you've done another really good piece of work, so that's great.
Thank you, I really appreciate you inviting us to do this. It's and it's nice chatting to you, and it's quite funny talking, you know, obviously, because you know, when we started off, but like chatting to you, thinking about the whole sort of 25 years is like, it's a bit weird in itself as well. It's quite surreal, isn't it?
It is. It's, you know, and who knows what the future is going to hold, but it's full of surprises.
Yeah, we've just done I've just dropped a hashtag this morning. Have you seen all the latest? The latest.
Stay alert.
Communications. Yeah. I just did one this morning, so I put it out there to see if it gets anything traction, which we've been playing around with on what would you do in once social distancing's out there. So I've done this thing which is stay well apart, but moved the underscore, you know, so you go stay well, space apart. Because I think there's so many complicated messages.
Oh, yeah. And what does stay alert really mean anyway? I'm not like, at least stay at home. I knew what I was supposed to be doing.
I know, this is what I can't get my head around. It's like, you know, stay alert. Well, you stay alert when there's thieves operating in the area, or you stay alert. I can't, it's a bit confusing, isn't it? And it doesn't roll on from the last thing. So, yeah, we're doing something that we've dropped this morning, and we're going to build on in a week,
Cool. Well, yeah, it's been great to have a chat to you, and
great to talk to you.
I'll put this out sometime during the week. And good luck with everything else, and I'll keep an eye on it.
Thanks, man. And let's have another one and have a good old chin wag.
Yeah, I'll get Gabby on
there. Let's have another catch up.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Yeah, right. We'd love to you all. And with Jackson and the music I heard with the little concert on the street, keep doing that stuff. It's absolutely so cool.
He did Crossroads yesterday by Cream, and it was the best. So if you look on Facebook, so Gabby will put that up, and you can have a chat.
I love it. He's got a lot of talent there, isn't he? It's brilliant. I love seeing it.
Cool. Well, have a good Sunday evening, all right, and let's chat soon.
Yeah, enjoy your day.
Okay,
cheers. Take care, mate. Thanks again. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.